What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am Dave Smith, just me today. And we will not, a quick heads up, we will not have the members only episode, won't be at the normal time tomorrow. Me and Rob will record one for you guys this weekend because we'll both be on an airplane. We're flying out to Houston, Texas tomorrow, coming back to the Houston Punchline. Great club. Love doing comedy shows out there in Houston. Really looking forward to it. See some of you guys out there tomorrow. Friday and Saturday night. By the way, I should also mention a bunch more stuff coming up. I actually should kind of rattle this off here, but comicdavesmith.com is where to go for all of my my stand-up comedy shows. Plus I have up there too, I'll be speaking at the Young Americans for Liberty. Hold on. So this starting tomorrow, July 9th, 10th, and 11th, Houston, Texas. July 16th, Huntsville, Alabama. July 17th, 18th, and 19th, I'll be at Zany's Comedy Club in Nashville, Tennessee, one of my favorite places in the world. Then July 28th is the YALCON, Young Americans for Liberty event I was telling you about. I'll be speaking there. The event's running like the whole week, but I'm just there for that one day, July 28th, because then I got to head out to the Improv in Fort Lauderdale, July 30th and 31st. Then Appleton, Wisconsin, August 13th, 14th, 15th. And then of course it all ends with the Comedy Mothership, August 28th through 30th. Grab those tickets now, 'cause those ones will sell out quick. People are always trying to grab tickets for the Mothership shows. So make sure, do yourself a favor, get them now. Comic Dave Smith for all those, dates. And of course, porchtour.com for all of Robbie's, headlining shows. All right. So a lot happened last night, and it looks like the memorandum of understanding has collapsed. We'll see what happens going forward, but we will play you from the president himself saying that the memorandum of understanding is over. And when Donald Trump says it's over, that means, well, pretty much anything. So the latest on this is that there was essentially what happened was it looks like the Iranians attacked a few ships that were traveling through the Strait of Hormuz on the Oman side. Now, essentially, the Strait of Hormuz is pretty small, and that's why this has been such a problem the whole time. But I guess there is the side over by Oman that the U.S. military has preferred ships to use. There was some type of miscommunication or outright aggression. It's quite possible as well. But essentially, from what I've read, the Iranians, look, the memorandum of understanding, and we'll get into all of this a little bit more. The memorandum of understanding, well, it was kind of vague, okay? It essentially says that Iran agrees not to charge a toll for 60 days. And then after that period, Iran and Oman kind of can figure it out. It'll be left to them. But it's not, again, it's not as if this was a detailed, hammered out, thing. And so the Iranians took that as, okay, we're not charging a toll, but we're controlling it and we'll direct you to come through here. And the Americans took it as, no, you can't tell anyone where to go anyway. Okay, so that's like kind of the basic framework here. And the Iranians attacked these ships. The Americans responded by bombing the crap out of Iran, and Iran responded by hitting a bunch of U.S. targets in the region, demonstrating that they still can do that. There's a lot to talk about here, and I'm almost kind of wondering where to start. But I guess, why don't we go to the president's words, and then we can get some of the stats. Let's go to the first cut of Donald Trump addressing the situation this morning.
Fire over. Is the ceasefire done? Is the MOU dead?
It's a very interesting question. To me, I think it's over. I don't want to deal with them anymore. They're scum. You know what scum is? They're scum. They're sick people. They're led by sick people. And they're vicious, violent people. And if they had a nuclear weapon, they'd use it. As far as I'm concerned, it's over. I'll speak to our negotiators. They want to negotiate. They're good people. Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner. But they have to come back to me. As far as I'm concerned, it's just a waste of time dealing with them. They're liars, we make a deal. And they if I make a deal with him, we have a deal. And he goes out, he talks. We make a deal. Everyone's agreed. No nuclear weapon. We make a deal. They go outside, talk to the press. They say, we never even talked about it. There's something wrong with them. They're cuckoo. As far as I'm concerned, it's over.
All right. So, of course, the big news there is that he said it's over. You know? And so, again, what does that really mean? Absolutely nothing. Just to be clear, absolutely nothing. And that's also, there's something to that. Having a leader whose word means absolutely nothing. There are costs associated with that. So, I mean, look, it's truly remarkable. I mean, yeah, look, there's probably never been a human being with more chutzpah than Donald Trump. And so who else would be better to make a claim like this? But Donald Trump, imagine, it's so kind of pathetic that at the end of all of this, all he has is, it's just like his frustration, you know, the same as tweeting that he's going to destroy their civilization, just frustrated that things aren't working out well. So he lashes out. But in this case, he's lashing out. It's such a weaker lash out than I'm not saying that it's preferable to threaten to destroy a civilization. I'm simply saying that it, at least, however evil, you're coming at it from a position of strength when you say, I'll destroy you. But when you just go, you're such bad people, it's just incredibly weak. And then what leg does he have to stand on to even say this? They are so bad. You know, I get on the phone with them and they agree, and then they go out and they say there was no agreement. They're so dishonorable. It's like, dude, everybody paying attention to this knows that you, Japan Pearl Harbor style, snuck attack them in the middle of negotiations twice. Twice they did that. Look, I mean, it's just unbelievable that you could do that and then turn around and say, you know, this is, I mean, come on, dude, have some decency, have some honor. We made a deal. Look, in this situation here, it's, I think, becoming harder and harder to deny the reality that this was, look, here, this is what I've been saying from the beginning of the war. Beginning of this war. I talked about it yesterday on the, or 2 days ago on the episode with Scott Horton, when I said that we were talking about how at the beginning of the war, once Iran responded in the way they did, it was clear that they had, the incentives had changed. Throughout this entire thing, I think we've been covering what the Iranian government has been saying and what the Iranian government has been doing. And it paints a pretty clear picture. I mean, you know, there are a lot of unknowns in this war, and there's always, you know, questions about what exactly will happen. But if you look at the way the Iranians have behaved throughout this thing and what they're saying, there's a lot of cohesion there. Not so much true for Donald Trump, right? Like, Donald Trump is all over the place. One day, this is the third level, and they're way better than the first level, and they're great to negotiate with. You know, that's after I was going to wipe them off the map. Then I think we can make a great deal. Now they're crazy people again. You know, it's like the Iranian government has been very clear. Donald Trump's all over the place. They are not giving up control of the Strait of Hormuz. This is what they've said the whole time. I just want to go over a couple things to kind of like remind people. Because, man, this whole thing has moved quick, and sometimes it's hard to keep it all linear. But if you remember, at the end of the first month, so the first month of this war, when it was a hot military conflict before it went into the economic war, at the end of it was when Donald Trump was making all those crazy threats, Allah Akbar, the civilization will be wiped off the map, every bridge and tunnel will be destroyed, all that stuff. Then, if you remember, he makes the crazy pivot to the ceasefire. Now, when Donald Trump first makes the pivot to the ceasefire, he says, try to remember the details of this, that he's agreed to the 10-point plan. Now, at the time, the 10-point plan or the 10-point proposal had been this thing that the Iranians were putting out there that was like, it again, you have to remember this is a couple months ago, and even at the time, it was like a crazy list of demands. Like, the it was like that Iran controls the Strait of Hormuz forever, that the U.S. has to leave the region, that all sanctions have to be lifted. They have to pay reparations for the debt they have to pay reparations for the damages of the war, the reconstruction, all this stuff. And it was so what Donald Trump clearly did in that moment was he goes, he had threatened to take out every bridge and tunnel. They said, bring it on. We're going to take out every desalination plant in the region. Like, you want to do this? We're going total destruction. Essentially, he challenged him to a game of chicken. They didn't swerve, so he swerved first. And he posts that they have agreed. Now, this is by all accounts at this point, there were no conversations taking place at this point. But he says that the Iranians had or whatever. He says they had agreed to the 10-point plan. Or he said the 10-point plan was a good framework to start. And then this set off a crazy thing where everyone's like, wait a minute, hold on. You just went from we are going to destroy their civilization to we will totally capitulate to these wildest of demands. You know, look, what Iran got out of the Memorandum of Understanding was quite a lot. I mean, this was America agreeing we lose the war and you win. But the original 10-point plan was even more than this. So Donald Trump said the 10-point plan was a good framework. And the Iranians said, okay, bet, deal. Let's negotiate over it. Then, of course, Donald Trump got the expected fallout the next day in the American media where, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You went from I'm going to destroy your entire civilization to I'm completely capitulating to all of your demands. What does that mean? Now, of course, if you can remember at this point, the Israel lobby is furious. They're going out of their minds, putting a bunch of pressure on him. So Donald Trump goes, no, no, no. We didn't agree to that 10-point plan. We agreed to a different 10-point plan. No other 10-point plan had been floated around. He said that if you remember, there was it Caroline Leavitt, one of the spokespeople for the administration said that that 10-point plan came in, we threw that in the garbage, and they sent us a new 10-point plan. Now, at the time, we called this perfectly, but I just want to go back. Maybe it was unnecessary for me to add that line in there, but I just want to go back and make it clear how obvious it is that this was all nonsense at the time. This did not happen. The Iranians did not send them a new 10-point plan. There was no other 10-point plan floating out there. This was all, obviously all lies from the administration. What happened is Donald Trump said the 10-point plan, so it's vague enough, a little bit clever, I guess, on their part, although it only, it's clever that only lasts you like another, it's like was the old Nate Bargatze joke, but if a tiger misses you, he only missed for a second. If a tiger lunges at you and you get out of the way, you can't go, good, got him. But it bought you another second, but not that great. So anyway, it bought him another couple days. But so the point was here that he publicly said, we accept total capitulation to you, without saying total capitulation to you, just 10-point plan. Then the Iranians went, okay, sure. We accept total capitulation to us. And then he goes, no, 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 no. That's not what we're talking about at all. And this is what happened. If you remember where they went and they met for, what was it, like 26 hours or something like that, J.D. Vance. This was after he agreed to the 10-point plan. After the ceasefire went into effect, they went there. They go to the negotiations. The whole thing completely falls apart because once they get into the negotiations, they're like, no, 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 no. We're not going to actually give you all of that. And Iran's like, well, that's why we're here to begin with. So again, Donald Trump. Okay, so the Iranians at that point, when it came down to them, the negotiations fell apart for a reason because they went, no, we're not really bending on what our point is. Now, the final memorandum of understanding, again, it's kind of the same thing. Donald Trump is in a situation where he's desperate to get them to stop. Like, he needs that straight open. He needs this Strait of Hormuz to get open, and he needs oil to get moving. That's his issue. And what he did essentially again in the Memorandum of Understanding was essentially do a similar type deal where it's like, look, we're totally capitulating. I mean, that's why there was such a freak out over here by all the war hawks. Cause like, dude, you just put down on paper and signed your name to a complete capitulation, agreeing that they win the war. But with enough vagueness that we're not exactly sure. So there can be some room to argue over what exactly we meant was supposed to happen in the Strait of Hormuz right now or something like that. Anyway, I bring all of this up just to kind of point out that we have now, you know, look, like this entire war, as I've mentioned many times throughout the whole thing, like from the very beginning, it was clear that the incentives changed, as we've talked about a million times. You know, the Iranians waving the white flag, which, let's be clear, that's what the Iranians had been doing to the United States of America up until the launch of this last war, including throughout the 12-day war. And I'm saying going back to at least September 11th, 2001, the Iranians have essentially just been like, they're essentially waving the white flag to us. You know, they may talk some shit to their own people. You know, they're like, hey, listen, don't tell them we're waving the white flag to you. I mean, that's what I mean by like the response to the 12-day war being, we're going to send missiles at an empty base and call you and give you the information so you can shoot them all down. Now, what is that? That's waving the white flag to you, but then going back to your people and being like, yeah, we just busted this. So that's kind of the dynamic there. Now, as I've been saying for the last 3 months, right? The Iranians waving the white flag over the last, you know, whatever, 25 years to the U.S. empire is kind of akin to, you know, like if someone ever told you, I mean, I got this a lot when I was a kid because I grew up in Brooklyn in the 80s and 90s, but people used to say this was like the rule of thumb was like, if you get mugged and someone pulls a gun, you give them your wallet. You know, you give them your wallet, right? So essentially, why is that advice that someone would give you? Well, because like, I don't know, dude, I mean, the guy's got a fucking gun and you don't know how unhinged and crazy this guy is. He's already at the point where he's mugging people on the street. Like, Jesus Christ, man, let's not test this. He's clearly desperate. You give him your wallet. He's probably going to take your wallet and sprint and try to see how much cash is in there and go get drugs or something like that. But like, my God, you start tussling with this crazy maniac who's got a gun and who knows, he might squeeze the trigger up. Right. So the idea of why you're supposed to go, all right, buddy, here, just take the wallet is like, hey, your life is a lot more important than your wallet. So like, just don't, right. You're trying to preserve yourself. So you capitulate. So you'll survive. But what happens? Like, okay. So for example, if I were, not that I would do my best to never put my wife in this situation, but if I was giving advice to my wife and saying, hey, she goes, hey, I'm on I'm in a dark alley alone or something like that. Again, not a situation I'd ever allow her to be in, but let's just say I'm in a dark alley alone. Guy pulls a gun on me, says, I want your wallet. What do I do? Like, well, obviously give him your wallet. Give him your wallet. Now change the scenario. Guy pulls up with a van, puts a gun to me and says, get in the van. Now that's a different calculation. Now, I don't think too many people are telling you quietly get in the van. You know, a guy says, duct tape your mouth and wants to handcuff you and get in the van. Now I think at that point you actually fight, even if the guy's got a gun. Cause whew, man, you're getting, you know, like, so again, the calculation changes here. And once they came back and killed the Ayatollah and his whole family, and my God, think about how stupid this is now in hindsight, publicly announced that it was regime change, that the people were going to rise up and overthrow the government. Okay, well, now it's on. Now you got no choice. But okay, so as we've been saying this whole time, that major incentive changed. Okay, now, again, as we've been saying this whole time, Donald Trump's whole bluff this whole time, whether it was threatening them with total annihilation, or it was blockading the Strait of Hormuz, or it was bombing them last night, the goal the entire time from Donald Trump here is to get them to capitulate. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible for something to change, but if there is one thing that has been made clear here throughout this whole war, it's that they're not going to capitulate. They are not going to back down over this. And also very clearly, The control of the Strait of Hormuz is the thing they're going to hang on to. And, you know, obviously, however you feel about the Iranian regime, why wouldn't they? Of course they would. Strategically, tactically, this is the move that makes so much sense. Look, they know where they are. They were just in the crosshairs of the most powerful military empire that's ever existed, with the explicit goal being their destruction. And they were able to bring the world to its knees by control of this strait. Now, of course, and again, this is one of those things. Remember I said before, I go, part of the reason, like I have a boy, part of the reason as a dad, you'd teach your son that you always keep your word. You know, you make a commitment, you're going to be somewhere, you're going to do something, you do that. Now, why is it that fathers like me and other dads, if you're listening, why is it that fathers like us want to instill that into our son? Well, partly because it's the right thing to do, but that's not the only reason. There's also there's a practical reason why you teach your son that for his own benefit. And the idea is that your word, you may need it someday. You know, that's the boy who cried wolf story, right? You be careful with your word, because you may need it someday. And you may need it when it's really, really important. Good life lesson for everyone to learn. Donald Trump is now in a situation where, because he's destroyed his own word so much, the Iranians have no choice but to never give up control of the Strait of Hormuz. Now listen, think about it like this. If you were, like, let's act like, imagine you, try to put yourself, we all want the war to go well, right? Like, we're all, like, rooting for as little people to die, as little destruction and wasted resources as possible. But let's say that you had a lot more than that on the line. Let's say you had on the line, if you lose, you're going to be dragged through the streets by a pack of just savages, and you're going to be beaten and sodomized with objects to death. Imagine you had that riding on the line on this war. Okay, what I'm describing is the way Muammar Gaddafi died after his government was toppled. So just to be clear, the people in the Iranian government, that's what they have on the line. Like, that could never be matched by what Donald Trump has on the line, which is essentially being embarrassed and his legacy being bad. That's different. Nobody expects Muammar Gaddafi's fate to befall Donald Trump. But if we were to take out this government, quite possibly, that's what those guys are looking at. And so in a situation like that, when you have that on the line, and you're negotiating with somebody who has launched a war of aggression against you twice already in the middle of negotiations, has let their junior partner assassinate negotiators. Maybe not every time they wanted to, but at least some of the time. They when you're in a situation like that, when we have attacked this country in an act of aggression, when they have not attacked us twice in the last year, the assumption from the Iranians has to be that this is coming again. Or it has to be that at least that's the plan, right? Now, look, I have said before, in fact, I think me and Rob maybe slightly disagreed about this a couple weeks ago. But I had said that my read on this situation is that Donald Trump pivoted both times because he lost. He pivoted from the hot war to the economic blockade because he lost the hot war. When I say lost, he blew up a lot more of their shit than they blew up of ours, but we were taking damage bad and the numbers were not on our side and we were burning through too many missiles too quickly, depleting our stockpiles. Then he pivots to the economic war. You're blockading the Strait of Hormuz, we'll blockade you getting out of the Strait of Hormuz. The game of chicken. It'll crush your economy before we're too scared of what's going on under the global economy. And he lost that too. Okay? So my perspective on this, my read on this thing, is that Donald Trump's desperate to get out. Now, Rob's read, again, I don't want to misrepresent Rob if he's not here, but we did, if you guys all heard the show, we had a little bit of a disagreement a couple of weeks ago. Now, Rob's read was like, maybe this is just a pause, replenish stockpiles to go back to war, a diversion to go back to war. Now, whatever it was, the point I'm trying to make is that the Iranians have to go with Rob's assumption, right? If you're in the situation where being sodomized to death is on the table, you have to go with the most, you know, like cautious route. You have to be conservative. You got to go, let's hope Dave's right, but we have to assume Rob's right and another war is coming. Well, what do they need if another war is coming? You know, they need to have their, you know, what is it? Professor Pape called it. It was something, I forget exactly the term he used, but it was something like they found an alternative nuclear deterrent or something like that. So they've got to keep that going. And then, of course, you know, going forward, as we've covered here on the show, I've been talking about this for 3 months now, control of the Strait of Hormuz transforms Iran into a global power. That's fact. If you control where 20% of the world's oil flows through, you're a global power. You're up there. You know, I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know where on the list of global powers they are, but I think actually not that far down. Like, I don't want to commit to this because this is something you'd have to sit down and really think about. But obviously, the US, China, Russia are in the top three spots. It's kind of up for debate after that. Okay. So Iran is, so this transforms them into being a global power. Now, let me ask you something. How many countries, if you had the opportunity to transform into a global power, wouldn't take it? How many governments, if you were to say, hey, you have a choice between ruling over a relegated, isolated, sanctioned, crippled third world country, or you have the opportunity to rule over a world power? How many of them are picking the former? Okay. Probably not too many. And not too many, like, how many people would turn down $1 million? Like, really slim. It's a really small percentage of people who don't want that. And okay, so you got all that going on right now, right? I mean, these are two tremendous incentives. It's really, really hard to overstate both of them, right? Like, who wouldn't want to rule over a global power, and who would want to ensure against being sodomized to death? These are two very strong incentives. And we have the track record that they haven't flinched while the greatest power in the history of the world has threatened everything but, and maybe even brushed up against, nuclear annihilation. They haven't budged off of any of that. And they have these overwhelming, powerful incentives. And then you have the fact that they just won the war. You know, like, why would you give up on those most, let's say you had the opportunity to transform into a global power, or you could just capitulate so that the memorandum of understanding stays intact. But like, from the Iranian perspective and from the objective perspective, they won the war. Trump is like out of threats, essentially. I mean, don't get me wrong. Obviously, people die when he drops these strikes. Things are destroyed. But I'm just saying, like, how many times does it need to be overwhelmingly signaled that they'll take that? They're willing to take that and keep going. The initial bombing campaign in Iran was huge. Doesn't look like bombing campaigns is going to be able to do this. And again, if it could, right? Like, if a bombing campaign could get them to capitulate, then what's with all, what is this? Where, remember when the idea that this war would be months long was ridiculous? Look at where we are. Remember when we weren't supposed to ever get here? Okay, why have we been waiting? If there is a card to be played that Donald Trump can play, that gets the Iranians to capitulate, why has he not played that card yet? He threatened to take out every bridge and tunnel. Their civilians were wrapping themselves around the bridges. Okay. Like, what's the play here that gets them to capitulate? And if he has one, why hasn't he played it yet? That doesn't seem to be adding up. Here, let's go to the next clip of Donald Trump from this morning.
You know, when people say, how come they haven't taken over? They can't take over because they're dead. They killed them. Nobody's going to take over. They have no guns, and the other side has machine guns. And they're killing them. The press doesn't report it. But they're bad people. They're bad people. And frankly, I don't want to waste my time with them. Now, I'll let our wonderful negotiators keep talking if they want, but I don't see it. I don't like these people. You know that? I like him. I like the leaders. I think all of these leaders. Right. You know, when people say, how come they have...
That's what he's got. I mean, it's just... There is something about this. I mean, it's different. I'm not saying it's exactly the same thing, but it does. I did think that this moment felt a lot like Joe Biden events at the end of his presidency. Like, do you remember when they would have like an interview or something with Joe Biden where it was just like so like, even if you don't like him, you feel bad that they're doing this to him. Just so weak and embarrassing. I mean, this is what Donald Trump is left with here is I don't like them. They're mean. They're wrong. Just the way they're handling themselves after I launched a war of aggression against them. And they're, you know, and his comment here, you know, I mean, dude, it's like you launched this war. You lied your way through the whole thing. I've been talking about how much we're winning the whole time, how a deal is about to come. How many times has he told us a deal is done? Now he's just sitting here talking about how they're such bad people that you can't make a deal with them. Oh, the people can't rise up and take the government because they killed them all. You told them to rise up? Then maybe it wasn't the best idea to launch a war. I thought we were getting regime change. I thought we had already accomplished regime change. I mean, like, how do you sit here? You know, if there was consensus on one issue in this country, man, it was that we didn't want another stupid war. You launch another stupid war, the one you and your director of national intelligence and your vice president had been running against. You launch the war, you lose the war. And then you come back and cry that they're mean. They're bad people. They're not negotiating in good faith after we snuck attack them twice while we were negotiating and then murdered 200 of their little girls. And they're being mean about it is what the president of the United States has left for you. Whew. All right, let's go to the third Donald Trump clip.
Last month, you said Iranian leaders were very rational people, nice people to deal with, strong people, smart people. Today, you said they were scum, sick people, and being led by sick people. What changed, and do you think...
I got to know them. So? I've said that about a lot. Now, when you say rational, I think they're much more rational than level one, level two. Level one is gone, level two is gone. This is level three. I think they are more rational, but based on their actions over the last week or two, they're not doing a service to the people. And I think more than anything else is I got to know them. And I'm not sure I want to make a deal with them. We can play games, but I'm not sure I want to make a deal. Let's just finish the job. Yeah, please go.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, guys. Donald Trump just doesn't want to play games. I just don't want to play games. I don't even want to make a deal. Oh, I thought that we've made 25. So we've made 25 deals and had a victory declared 73 times. The strait's been open. Wasn't the strait supposed to just open up by itself? Ay, ay, ay. Now, look, I do think it's worth just the one of the lies, because there's so many. I mean, look, this entire war has been sold off lies. Everybody selling it to you has either been lying to you or has bought lies. But this is a particularly important one to focus on. This absolute bald-faced lie that level three, by the way, I'd love to see the science on how you exactly determine level one, two, and three, but the idea that level three is more reasonable. they're more reasonable, this claim that of course was like a face-saving claim so that he could make a deal and get out of there, which is why he has to go back on the thing he said last week, as he always does. The idea that there is any reason to believe that the current people in charge of the Iranian regime are less radical than the dead Ayatollah is just, but you're telling me that the regime who just literally what we have right now, okay, the situation right now, and this is for particularly for people who have like are somewhat familiar with the Iranian, you know, conflict over the last 25 years, where U.S.-Iranian relations have been. But let's just to say this, imagine that you're trying to tell me. So as of last night, okay, as of last night, or I guess as of yesterday, the Iranian, this is the position this Iranian regime is in. They've survived the war. They've won. There's a war of regime change, and the regime is still standing. Donald Trump said the people will rise up and rule their own government. The people are right where the fuck the people have always been this entire time. The Strait is under Iranian control with an agreement that in 60 days, there's no restrictions on them charging tolls on it. The world is now recognizing them as a global force. Countries are making deals with them. And America is looking for a way out of this war that they started against the Iranians. And think about the position that the Iranians are in. And then the Americans go, we're going to have our military guide some ships through here. And they go, no, 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 the ship's got to come through here. And then they just guide them through there. They went and shot at those ships. That's where the Iranian regime is right now. Even sitting on a big fat W, because they're sitting on a big fat W, they went, nope, we'll go back to war over this. That's the Iranians that we're looking at right now. The Iranians who are vowing to take out desalination plants. The Iranians who are not backing down on any of this shit. Compare that to an Ayatollah who called ahead to before he sent missiles at a base that was unoccupied and had a holy fatwa against nuclear weapons. There is no world in which this government is less radical than the previous one. And I don't know, it's kind of important to point that out, because this may not be like the biggest, sexiest lie of all the lies that Donald Trump has you know, told about this war, but it's a big one. And it's an important thing to realize, because I don't know. I'm not going to try to, I'm not trying to turn this into an I told you so. In the next segment, it might be unavoidable. But this is why so many of us were born and against this war to begin with. You have created a more radical Iranian regime. And that's objectively obvious. Like, just again, just looking at what they do. They use the old Ayatollah used to make sure he gave advance notice because he didn't want to kill Americans in the base, because he knew that could maybe lead to a war. These guys are not doing that. Look, the bottom line is kind of this. There was, nobody wanted this war except for the Israel lobby, some people in weapons companies, and the Trump administration. American people didn't want this war. No one with any common sense wanted this war. And Trump's coalition, which has now been destroyed, largely didn't want this war. But they launched it anyway, and here we are. It's all been based off lies. The whole goddamn thing is bullshit. It's been an unmitigated disaster. And now this memorandum for understanding is falling apart. Now, Donald Trump is... he's in a position. You know, there. Let's just look at this, right? Even as Donald Trump is saying, okay, he wants to sit here and say that the regime is less radical. Okay, right. Okay, fine. They're so much more reasonable, and yet you still can't make a deal with them. And okay. Even what we're talking about now, the only major problems that even exist I mean, what's keeping us in this, the problems that are keeping us embroiled in this conflict right now are the Strait of Hormuz. This is, of course, the one that just popped off last night. The other major issue is the war in Lebanon. Of course, because when we launched this war in Iran, our dear friends who drug us into the war, they took that opportunity to launch a bonus war, because even though it was against U.S. interests, even though we didn't want them to, they launched a bonus war, and they're now occupying southern Lebanon and talking about how they're going to keep it permanently, and they've killed a whole bunch of people. According to some reports, more people than have died in Iran have died in Lebanon. I'm not sure if that's right. But anyway, we got the war in Lebanon, and we got the Strait of Hormuz. How can you hide the fact that neither of these two things were problems before the war? The war that you launched that nobody wanted. Neither of these things were problems. Dude, nobody's even thinking about nuclear dust right now. Enrichment levels. This is a joke. Are the 60 days going to be enough to reach a JCPOA? Well, it looks like the memorandum of understanding is over, according to Donald Trump right now. So, I mean, listen, they obviously, the administration already backed off of ballistic missiles. They already backed off of enriching uranium at all. They already backed off of the dust. They already backed off of all of the war goals. All of the war. So let's just be clear here, okay? We've walked away from all the goals of the war. We're not even talking about trying to get any of that stuff. Now we're just talking about the Strait and reining Israel in Lebanon. It's not even the same thing anymore. And so look, if this is true that the memorandum of understanding is over, and just to be clear again, when Donald Trump says it's over, that means absolutely nothing. Again, the point I was making before about what I would teach my son, you're going to need your word one day. That might really come in handy. Actually, if Donald Trump wanted to make a deal with the Iranians right now, man, could he really use his word? It's a shame he doesn't have it. You know, listen, that might sound kind of, I know in some ways that almost it sounds naive to the layman. To be like, what does your word matter, Dave? This is high stakes. You know, this is geopolitical negotiations at the absolute highest level. But they're taking your word for it. Actually, that's how it works. Yes, I know it may. If you don't know it, listen, Kennedy got on the phone with the Russians and said, if you pull the nuclear if you pull the nuclear missiles out of Cuba, we'll pull our nukes out of Turkey. And it saved the fucking human race. It's the reason we're not all dead. Okay, so like, yeah, actually your word does really matter, even at the highest level, especially at the highest level. Okay, anyway, sorry, I digress. But if the memorandum of understanding is really over now, okay, well then, hey, here's the situation. Donald Trump is saying, hey, I'm done dealing. And he said something earlier about like, I might finish him off, back to that threat. Now, first off, I would let you know that if we're talking about saying I'm going to finish them off as an exercise in scaring them into capitulating and agreeing to something, why would they do that now? Why would that work now from a, just to be clear, much stronger position than they were in after a month of the war when Donald Trump first threatened that? A couple months later, they're way better off than they were. I was reliably told by Will Chamberlain that they would collapse by now, but anyway, that didn't, believe it or not, that didn't come true. Oh my God, I don't know if you guys, any of you saw my Piers Morgan episode the other day, which again, it wasn't like my favorite episode, it was a little bit of a wasted one, but nothing against anyway, it's just the topic of like the all the stuff about soccer just didn't interest me that much. There's the one point at the end of it where what's his name, who is on the show with me, the sports guy, Clay Travis, I think his name is. He was on the show with me. And then at the end of it, he's been one of Trump's like, you know, cheerleaders this whole time. And then at the end of it, he goes, look, you know, I think we've just come to the realization that you're not going to be able to achieve regime change without boots on the ground, and that could lead to huge losses of life. And you're like, oh my God. After you could see me, I don't know, just getting frustrated. Like, you're like, if only someone could have thought of this before. If only we could have known that you can't achieve regime change through the air alone. Anyway. But if this is the case, The memorandum of understanding is over. Donald Trump goes, well, yeah, if they won't deal, then we're going to hit him real hard. We're going to hit him real hard. Okay. Again, if that's not to try to get them to capitulate, then what's it for? Are we going to hit him? These are our options. These are our options. We can just bomb them a bunch again. Let me just humbly suggest that there is an alternative option. And that is the obvious one. It's the walk away plan. Jeffrey Sachs pushed this a couple months ago. I know Daniel Davis has been pushing this for a while. A lot of brilliant guys out there have been saying this. And at this point, it's pretty obvious that they're right. How about this? We don't got to sit here. We don't got to listen to idiotic J.D. Vance, you know, press tours trying to tell us how it was a really great idea to launch this war. And that's why we got to surrender now. Just idiotic stuff. You don't need to defend the memorandum of understanding. The conversation's kind of over. We have to end this war. We cannot open the strait. Let's leave. Let them figure it out. It's more likely to open the thing up at this point than not. We don't have to guarantor or organize or commit to a $300 billion reconstruction fee. Let's just leave. Just walk away. It was the war that nobody wanted, that this administration lost, that this administration launched, then lost again, and then capitulated. Now they're trying to sit here and say, hey, those guys are mean. General rule of thumb. In fact, Smith's law, not a rule of thumb, a law. When you launch illegal wars of aggression, you don't get to end them saying that guy's mean. I don't know if that's a law. Now that you mention it, it's not really a law. It's a thing you shouldn't do. All right. Let's go to this before we end this show, because I saw this the other day and I had missed it initially when it came out. But evidently last month, Dinesh D'Souza, friend of the show, he made a I don't know what to say. I saw it on Twitter, but he took some shots at me on his show. Me and Dinesh, of course, debated. We debated Judge Napolitano, the great Judge Napolitano, moderated the debate. I'm trying to remember exactly when this was. I don't know. Months ago. Was it last year we debated? I don't know. It's Zero Hedge. You can find it online if you go put it in. But we debated. I actually talked about having him on the show. I'd like to do that. I'll reach out to Dinesh. But I thought this was kind of interesting. So this is like from a month ago. I had just found it, but just keep in mind that it's from a month ago, because anything talking about the war in Iran, that's when, you know, that's when this would be taking place. But so he, I suppose, was still a little bit irked about some comments I had made when we debated. At one point, I think I had said to him that because he got the war in Iraq so wrong, he shouldn't even be talking anymore and he should go away. And this is something I've said over the years, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think I'm completely wrong about this. Like, I wouldn't carve it into stone. And obviously there are people like, say, hey, if you ask me, well, hey, Tucker Carlson supported the war in Iraq. Why doesn't he have to go away for that? Which he gets into Tucker in the video, so I'll explain. But obviously my answer for that would be that, like, oh yeah, because he changed his mind, profusely apologized, and has opposed every subsequent war. So, okay, that's a good example. But like, if you just like, you know, you argue with some of these people, like who have so many of them. I've debated a lot of people. I've debated several people who are on record having supported the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Libya, the war in Syria, the war in Yemen. And now they come at the war in Ukraine, and then they come out and they go, I'm supporting the war in Iran. And you just look at a certain point and you're like, why are you even allowed to talk to me? Like, I don't know. Maybe that's not the best thing. I mean, I still go out there and give arguments and stuff. But anyway, I did make that comment. And so he was responding here in this segment. So let's check in on Dinesh and we'll give our thoughts on it.
But first, I want to take note of the fact that the libertarian pundit Dave Smith, who calls himself somewhat mysteriously a comedian, said, ooh, I should retire from politics.
Here, why? Pause it for a second.
I was wrong about the Iraq war.
Low blow, Dinesh. Low blow. What? I do stand-up comedy. I've been doing stand-up comedy for 20 years. I'm also a political commentator. They always have to find a way. Come out to a show sometime, Dinesh. You'd have a good time. But yeah, okay. Anyway, yes, it's true. I was not trying to be funny when I was debating Dinesh D'Souza. I call myself a comedian because I am a professional stand-up comedian. I've got a list of dates on my website. Please come on out because I got a lot of seats I'm trying to fill. And yeah, I don't know. It's mysterious. I'm not funny when I debate Dinesh D'Souza, but I can do stand-up comedy, and then I can also kind of eviscerate Dinesh D'Souza in a debate. So it's the unique skills that I have. Anyway, let's keep playing.
Or basically, I supported the Iraq war because of apocalyptic claims from the Bush administration. Then I changed my view once I realized these claims were dead wrong. Dave Smith thinks this ends my credibility. But what about his credibility and that of his allies?
Okay, so pause it for a second here. So, I mean, of course, look, obviously that's like the nicest way to say it. But what am I saying? Like, what am I really saying? Am I really saying Dinesh D'Souza shouldn't be able to have a show anymore or something like that? No, of course not. And I'm obviously not saying, like, you know, there should be any law or anything, like, just be too hard to work out. But look, when he goes, I supported the war based on a bunch of information that turned out to be wrong, and so therefore I changed my mind. It's like, yeah, you supported a war of aggression against a country that had not attacked America based on intelligence that was clearly bullshit to anybody willing to look at it, okay? You supported a war of aggression based on lies. And that war resulted in over a million people dying, trillions of dollars being wasted, massive destruction to this country, thousands, tens of thousands, if you count the ones who commit suicide in the aftermath of our bravest young boys being killed. Like, that's the result of the policy you supported. So, like, I don't know. I would think, yes, there should be some major impact on you from that. And I'm sorry, but, like, I can't relate to that. There's never been a policy I supported that was then implemented, and then that was the result of it. So I'm not sure exactly how that would feel, but sure. Yes, are you telling me your credibility should take no hit? What should, it's like meet me in the middle here, Dinesh. Should there be any repercussions at all? But anyway, he's going to now try to set up that, yeah, I got a million people killed, but what about you? All right, so let's continue.
Of his allies like Tucker Carlson. Dave Smith has repeatedly said that, and I'm quoting him now, quote, it's genuinely hard to imagine a worse decision than going to war with Iran. They pose absolutely no threat to us, and the war would be a substantially larger catastrophe than Iraq. In fact, he
pause
said
it right
would,
there. Quote, here, let's just, I'm sorry, bring this back a little bit. Is he pretending to be quoting me here? Hold on. Let's just bring this back this last second. I want to see what is he saying my claim is? Hold on.
Repeatedly said that, and I'm quoting him now, quote, it's genuinely hard to imagine a worse decision than going to war with Iran. They pose absolutely no threat to us, and the war would be a substantially larger catastrophe than Iraq.
Pause it. Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. Is he claiming I said this, or is he claiming Tucker said this? I'm sorry. I apologize to the viewer and to you, Natalie. But he's saying I said this. He's saying I said, and quote. Okay. I'm going to need to see that quote. Here, bring it back to the beginning, because I want to hear this again, Natalie. Let me just double make sure. Because he said, I'm friends with Tucker Carlson. Is he claiming I said this, or Tucker said this? I want to hear the exact quote.
But first, I want to take note of the fact that the libertarian pundit Dave Smith, who calls himself somewhat mysteriously a comedian, said I should retire from politics. Why? Because I was wrong about the Iraq war. Basically, I supported the Iraq war because of apocalyptic claims from the Bush administration. Then I changed my view once I realized these claims were dead wrong. Dave Smith thinks this ends my credibility. But what about his credibility and that of his allies like Tucker Carlson? Dave Smith has repeatedly said that, and I'm quoting him now, quote, it's genuinely hard to imagine a worse decision than going to war with Iran. They pose absolutely no threat to us, and the war would be a substantially larger catastrophe than Iraq.
It would quote,
destroy the USA. And here's Tucker Carlson.
Pause it. Okay. So again, I'd like to see the quotes on this, like actually play the, like where he's clipping from. I know the quote he's talking about when he said it would destroy the USA. What I said was not if we bombed Iran, that would destroy the USA. I said like another 20-year Iraq style catastrophe. Like we don't have another one of those in us. So like we don't have the option, like the way we did. This is on Piers Morgan when I was debating Constantine Kassin. I remember this well. I said we don't have that in us. So like we can't throw another Iraq war would destroy this country. So again, I haven't been proven wrong on that. And I don't know. Is anyone trying to argue with me about like, are we going to run the experiment of having another 20, or no, I'm sorry, we're talking Iraq here now, but are we going to run the experiment of having another like decade long, you know, catastrophe where we spend $2 trillion and kill millions of people and then see where the United States of America is left after that? Okay, at the very, perhaps I'm being hyperbolic, but severely distraught. And I believe actually, pretty sure it's helpful if you use real quotes here. I believe my exact quote on Piers Morgan, now that I'm thinking about this, was, I don't know if we survive that. I believe that was my exact quote. So actually, I think I even caveated it there. In terms of me saying this will be worse than Iraq, again, show me the quote. What I said was that Iran is a much tougher target than Iraq and that potentially it could be worse than Iraq. And that, yeah, if we tried, and again, the point that I was making, he's being very sloppy here with his quotes of mine, but the point that I was making is, look, obviously the situation with Iran, what do you think would happen if we invaded Iran the way we invaded Iraq? A much worse bloodbath, obviously. But that is almost neither here nor there, whether or not he's, he's clearly being very disingenuous with the way he's strawmanning me here. I don't think I got any of these things wrong. Nonetheless, zooming out a little bit, and I'll get to the end of this here, but these things are not comparable. Like, these things are just not comparable. Like, I'm sorry, if you, hypothetically, if you were to say, you're in your house, let's say we live in a house together, and I got a gun, and I go, dude, I think that the guy next door is stockpiling guns so that he can come in here and kill all of us. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go kill this guy before he can use all those guns that he's stockpiling to come kill us. And then I run into the next house and I shoot it up and I kill an entire family. And a whole bunch of innocent people die. And then I find out he didn't have any guns at all. He was never stockpiling guns to come kill us. This was all just completely unnecessary. Just innocent people dead for absolutely no reason. And then you were to go like, dude, that's like so horrible that you did that. You should never be listened to again. We're never going to listen to you again if you have a plan to do something. Because my God, that was your last plan. And then I said, oh yeah? Well, what about the time when I had another plan to go run into a different house and go kill a bunch of people who I said were stockpiling weapons. And you said, if you do that, it'll be a disaster. And then I shot a couple people in there and it wasn't a disaster. Those are not the same thing. Those are not the same thing. It's not you got one wrong, I got one wrong. What are you talking about, dude? Your wrong led to a million people dying. My wrong, which you haven't demonstrated at all, led to nothing. Like even if you support the 12-day war and support this latest war in Iran, what is the catastrophe that would have happened if we hadn't fought either of them? Are you reduced to Donald Trump going, they would have nuked the entire world right now or something like that? See, you, in order to point to the catastrophe of my mistake, you have to make up bullshit. I'm looking at real history. Your policy was implemented and it resulted in this. My policy was not implemented here. My policy would have been don't fight a war in Iran. But we all know what would have been the result of that. Nothing. Nothing. It's like, I mean, who is honestly, you know, for anyone to convince you that if we just hadn't fought the 12-day war or we just hadn't fought this latest war in Iran, what would be different? Iran would be nuking the entire world. Iran would be, no one believes this shit. So again, the price tag of your policy, a million people. Hundreds of thousands of babies screaming as they, you know, lay on their mother's corpse. That's the tag of your policy. And the tag of my policy, nothing. Misquote me all you want to. It kind of doesn't change those fundamentals, Dinesh. This is why you don't win the debate when it's head to head. Let's play the rest of this.
USA. And here's Tucker Carlson. Quote, it's worth pointing out that a strike on the Iranian nuclear sites will almost certainly result in thousands of American deaths at bases throughout the Middle East. Tucker predicted a wide-scale war in the region that would draw in Russia and China and potentially escalate into World War III. These guys have been spouting this nonsense for a year nonstop, and they couldn't be more wrong. Now, it's okay to be wrong.
Sure, pause it. Pause it for a second. It's so funny, Dinesh. It's such a snaky, really, and I like Dinesh. I don't like personally dislike him, but this is a slimy move. If you're talking about me and the claim I made about how you should go away, and then you're slipping in a quote of Tucker Carlson and saying, these guys have been saying this stuff for years. Now, first of all, yes, Tucker Carlson, he was a little bit hyperbolic in that statement. Again, as we've talked about before, the spirit of the thing was saying, if you attack Iran, it'll result in this big disaster. And yeah, that part did come true. Excuse me, since you're talking to me, Dinesh, and this will be a public challenge I can issue to Dinesh. You tell me what I've been saying for the last year. And I want specific quotes, and I want them verbatim. What have I been saying this last year? Because everyone here listening to the show, you've been hearing me. What have I said? You know what I said? My phrasing since the 12-day war has been, we're at halftime. How wrong was that we were at halftime? We were at halftime, meaning another war is coming. And then it came. What have I been wrong about? I'm sorry, dude. But I understand that people, there was this thing before the 12-day war. Now, by the way, if you notice in any of these videos, he didn't quote me before. And it was totally misleading in the one quote that he had, which is not what I meant by it. But they never quote me because I haven't been wrong for the last year. Please, if I've been wrong about something for the last year, tell me what I've been wrong about. What have I been wrong about? That this war would be a disaster to launch? Okay. Anyway, here, let's keep playing.
And they couldn't be more wrong. Now, it's okay to be wrong, mm-hmm. but at least one should admit when one is wrong. Yet we have waited in vain for any confessions, any apologias, any mea culpas from these pundits. They simply move on from one false claim to the next, Candace Owens style.
I mean, again, this is, I move on from one false claim to the next. Dinesh, what is the false claim? You said a Tucker Carlson quote. You're saying, is your claim that I said this would be worse than Iraq and it's not worse than Iraq, therefore I got it wrong? Again, first of all, play the tape. Show me exactly where I said this. Because you know what I'm saying? I'm remembering the one from the Constantine debate. I don't think I'm on record saying this will be worse than Iraq. If I did, please show me where I said that. And if I was wrong, I'll happily admit that I was wrong. I don't think so. I don't think you got the tape on this. I don't think you got. And then also, of course, there's the other point here, which is that, you know, I don't know. You tell me. If I say to you, hey, we have to go fight a war for reason X and it will work out Y. And then I go, and X is a complete lie and Y is a complete lie. It doesn't work out that way. It's a disaster and it was based off lies. And then you're about to launch another war and I go, don't launch this war also because it's based off lies and it's going to be even worse than that last war. But it's not worse than that last war. It's a disaster, but it's not worse than that last war. Was I wrong in the same way you were wrong? I mean, is this what you're reduced to, Dinesh? Come on. I'm sorry, but it is to equate, which is what you have to do here in order to call me a hypocrite, to equate supporting a war, which you yourself admit was sold off lies and led to a disaster. Supporting that war is different than opposing a war and being a little bit hyperbolic while you oppose the war, which is what Tucker's guilty of there, not me, but that's what Tucker's guilty of there, I suppose, being a little hyperbolic when opposing a war that also ends up in a disaster. Is that what Dinesh is reduced to claiming are the same things? So I'm a hypocrite because I think Dinesh D'Souza shouldn't be taken seriously because he supported a policy that got a million people killed. But I don't feel the same way about Tucker Carlson for rightly opposing a policy that senselessly got a bunch of people killed and also slightly exaggerating what the devastation would be. Nah, I don't think they're the same, Dinesh. But happy to talk or debate about it again. Listen, my friend, with respect, I say to Dinesh D'Souza, this is why these arguments don't move the needle. And I saw that there was a poll that came out after me and Dinesh debated, and it was one of these things where, you know, I mean, it was like overwhelming. I think it was 85% or something said that I won the debate. And again, as I say with all these things, I think Dinesh D'Souza is a more talented debater than I am. I think Dinesh D'Souza is a more talented rhetorician than I am. This argument's just too weak. That's all. I got a real advantage here. This stuff's just too weak. All right, gotta go. We'll have a members-only episode out this weekend, and then we'll be back at it next week. Enjoy yourselves, guys. Peace.